I'm Abby.
And I'm Allie.
And it's
About Time for True Crime.
Hi.
Hey, guys.
How are y'all doing?
I'm getting over what was a very brief cold, so if I sound very sultry and
smelly
inviting,
I didn't mean it.
This is just the voice that I'm working with this week, but we thought we would hop on here and do a different kind of episode for you today. We've never done anything like this one before.
Yeah, we're going to dip our toe in the water of possibilities. And by that, I mean, we're just going to have a little chit chat, basically, about two cases that are sort of coinciding right now that we thought would be interesting to bring up.
Yes, we might consider this like a little spin-off series, if you will, or something that we might do in conjunction to normal episodes. Truth be told, fair warning, we did not do like deep dive research into this or these cases, I guess, compared to how we normally would present cases. But these are current events and things we just wanted to sort of like pop on here and share what we've been able to find out, and also point you in directions of places to get more information. But, you know, this is what's going on right now, and there's certainly very important things to talk about.
So this week, Allie and I both had the absolute pleasure of listening to that. It's kind of an association with Barstool Sports.
Yeah, so it's under the greater umbrella of Barstool, but it's the host of it is Kirk Minahan, who has done a true crime podcast called The Case Podcast.
Yes. And so Allie and I both listened to season two of that, which is about Sandra Birchmore, who was a young woman who was involved in sort of like a local police almost guidance
program,
sort of program. Yeah, it was called The Explorers, and basically kids and young adults, but primarily kids who wanted to be police officers or involved in the criminal justice world, could hang out, follow, sort of learn more about policing and the system at large with local police officers or school resource officers.
Which sounds great, and it's not unique to the PD that we're talking about here. So what we're really talking about happened in Stoughton, Mass, Massachusetts, for those of you not local to New England, like myself and now Abby, who is our newest transplant from a decade ago. Anyway, but this exists all over, at least the United States. Not every, you know, town and city has this, but on paper, it sounds like this incredible idea where you sort of have a way to sort of maybe bridge the gap between law enforcement and the community and young people who want to learn more, who are interested, who might want to work in this system or work as a police officer in general, to be able to ask those questions and ask about the day-to-day and learn a little bit more about what's going on in their communities. And it sounds like a great idea.
Right. And I think, you know, we talk a lot, at least learning in the field and sort of going to college and getting your degree in all of this, in the positive impact that like after school programs have on kids and reducing juvenile crime. We know how important it is for police officers to make a good connection with the community that they serve.
There's got to be investment on both sides, right? The community needs to be invested in what the work of law enforcement's doing. Law enforcement needs to be invested in that community being safe. And when there's a disconnect or waves or animosity there, I think we've seen all around our country what can happen. And there's layers and layers and layers of reasons why that exists. We're not going to get into that, but just the idea that when there's a positive relationship there,
everybody is safer and more.
Everyone benefits from that.
In a better spot. So what we're talking about today is this case that has briefly overlapped with the seemingly huge news of the Karen Reed case. But Sandra Birchmore was a child in this Explorers program and essentially was sexually assaulted and groomed by three various officers throughout her time from being a child to an adult.
Yes. And a little bit about Sandra. She came from, I would say, a troubled home.
Yeah, there was definitely some tension, some struggles there. I mean, her father wasn't in the picture and her stepdad had died right around the time that she joined this program.
Exactly.
I think it was just her mom and her grandma. And so obviously, like, there's benefits to her being an after-school program. Not only is it supervision for kids, but also it sort of introduced this idea of, like, a healthy male role model for her. And that was the hope, at least, you know?
It definitely seems like it, where she was sort of starved for this positive male presence in her life because, you know, what she had in a bio dad had seemingly taken off. What she had in a stepdad, she'd lost and had grieved him. And so, you know, it seems like mom and grandmother, they lived in the same home, is my understanding. There was sort of, there was a lot of positive female role models, it seems. But in terms of that strong male one, or, you know, any kind of paternal sort of figure, she didn't have that. And I think, you know, we talk a lot about programs for youth. And to me, it's twofold. One is I always think that if there's a job you want to do, you should get real world experience. You know, Abby and I have a combined 10 years of education in the criminal justice field, and I wouldn't change a thing about that. But I'll tell you this, we both learned far more working in the field, job shadowing, internships, getting involved in our own communities than you read in a textbook. And to me, that's just fact. So while I always would encourage young people to learn about the field you think you want to go into, and especially the one you think you want to spend thousands of dollars on an education for, before you end up doing it, and find out what it's like to really live that. But also, we know that when, you know, teens or young adults participate in other activities outside of school, we know that that is connected to lower crime rates. There's lower drug rates. There's more positive mental health impact. There's more sense of a community. There's more of a social life. There's more investment and buy-in from the kids. And you need that at that time. They need to give a shit about themselves.
Yeah.
And they need to give a shit about the things around them too. And so I think with this program, all of those things could sort of, in theory, exist at the same time. And for somebody like Sandra, who didn't have a lot of those positive outside connections, this on paper sounds like a great idea. And had I been her parent, I probably would have encouraged it.
Right. So essentially, Sandra joins this program in 2010. She's like 12 years old. And part of the issue with this program, at least in this location, this is not like a nationwide issue, but it is a trend that we need to look at, is that Sandra ends up getting groomed, essentially, by at least one of the officers. Like I said, in totality, there ends up being three that sort of assault her and abuse this power over her. But at the time, it's not like all three were there at the same time. So by the time she hits 15, a few years in the program, she's fully in like a sexual relationship with one of the officers.
Yes. And his name, and you may have seen it if you've been paying attention to the news around this case, is Matthew Farwell. And he is a Stoughton police officer.
Yes. And so while I'm not, like Allie said, we haven't done the exact same kind of like research and note taking that we normally do. So I don't fully remember if it was his supervisor, Robert Devine, that first started this, or if it was Matthew that first started this.
You mean the program or the abuse. Relationship with her?
Yes, the relationship with her. I don't remember who exactly started it, but essentially the three men were Robert Devine, the supervisor, and then Matthew Farwell and his brother had all separately sort of abused this power at different times in Sandra's life.
Exactly. And I think, you know, first of all, again, I just want to shout out the Case podcast. Abby and I listened to it. This is season two of this podcast.
Yeah.
In season one, Kirk essentially solved a different case.
Yep.
So he quite literally is two for two. And it's just incredible to see a true crime podcast doing what should be done. And he really dug and found answers. And it's interesting to hear him talk about what the staunch contrast between the community where he was looking into season one versus season two, because season two, everybody was tight-lipped, and Stoughton, Canton, everywhere that he was sort of reaching for these answers to get somebody who was willing to speak, or at least speak on the record, or even if they wanted to remain anonymous, what can you do with that? Where can you go?
Right.
And people didn't want to talk. People were afraid. They were concerned. They were like, not me, not now. No. Yeah, I'm not doing that. So when we're talking about this, know that we're kind of looking at it through the lens of, like, we're listening to what he was able to pull from this. And of course, now everybody's hopped on the bandwagon of, like, right. Oh, I solved this. No, you didn't. No. So all of the, you know, I don't want to say glory because it's not what it should be about, but the credit to serving justice really starts with him.
Yes. And one of the things that I liked so much about this was he sort of goes through this whole process, right? It's journalism. He's trying to interview people. He's trying to figure out what the hell happened and who knows what, who's not saying something they know, and who just doesn't know anything. But essentially, because he's looking at it while it's still cold, it's still technically open, I think he doesn't get very far, and he even calls it like a noble failure initially. And then he ends up doing two update episodes where he's like, oh, we just found this out. And oh, okay, actually now there's some real traction happening here. And it's horribly sad if you listen through it, because I definitely was on the same boat until I heard the last updates that was like, I don't think anything's going to happen about this. Like, I think it's just going to sort of end, fizzle out. Nobody's going to really do the work that Sandra deserves.
Right, because those who should have ruled it a suicide, which, and, you know, could it be? Sure.
So, for those of you who don't know, fast forward to, I think, 2021.
Yeah, very early, like January, February 2021.
Sandra is found in her apartment, essentially, I mean, she's dead, but essentially sort of hung herself, but while she was like sitting down. It was a very complex method of hanging yourself.
Yeah, from like with a belt or rope of some kind with a closet door. So again, warning, if that discussion of this upsets you, it's not long, but it's certainly important that could this have been her doing it to herself? They ruled it as that. And I think most law enforcement would tell you when you go into a scene or you're doing a well person's check or something like that, you would see something like that and you would assume suicide. I mean, it is that almost seems textbook, right? But it's only when you dig through the other aspects of Sandra's life that say there was no indication that she was suicidal. Right. She was making plans for the future, which just mental health is not linear and perfect. So that's not to assume that this, you know, that she made plans for next week meant that this wasn't the case, but she was pregnant. She was excited to be pregnant. And so yep. We have this thing where, you know, we're jumping forward, but we have in 2010, she's this kid joining this Explorers program. By her mid-teens, she's had sexual relationships with several of the officers and authority figures who were running this program. And fast forward to 2021, she is dead in her apartment, pregnant.
Right.
And whether she really did take her own life, I mean, personally, I don't think so. But that doesn't mean that it couldn't be or whatever. But at the same time, look at every other thing that was going on in her life, and who would have reason or who would have any kind of benefit from her not being around to speak for herself anymore.
Oh, you and mean I feel her like, yeah, married police officer groomer boyfriend?
Yes.
Yes.
Then that is what you need to look into. And so that's kind of what we want to talk about today, or just a little bit like what happened between 2010 and 2021 and where might we see this go from here?
Right. So some things that I definitely was interested in that I wanted to bring attention to is at that end of life. So for me, I kind of look at this as a story going backwards, not a story going forwards. I fear that if we look at it going forwards, knowing what we know now, it's a little too obvious, sort of, what happened, at least in my brain. And I know that I am, you know, pretending to be a judge and a jury here, but I think, you know, it's easy to draw a line from A to B to C to D.
Mm-hmm.
And for Sandra, she was known as a girl who definitely had some mental health. I mean, girly, who doesn't? Literally everybody does. But she had some difficulties with boundaries and like keeping things to herself. So she was very communicative when it came to a lot of her life. And at the end of it there, she was pregnant. I think she was definitely in her first trimester. It was early on, but she was super excited and she started planning. She got a car seat. She is looking at daycare. Like, She has these things planned out.
Her Amazon history was all baby related things. She had made this poster that I believe she texted him a photo of that's like, you're going to be a dad or we're going to be parents. And
yeah,
she was over the moon excited for this. And then, you know, you dig a little bit more into these text messages and he's pissed.
He's so angry.
She wants him on the birth certificate. She, yep. You know, because she's pregnant by him. There's no doubt in her mind that this is his child. But on the flip side of it, Matthew Farwell is considerably older than her. But more mm-hmm. importantly than that, he is married with two children, one on the way. And at the time that we're talking about, in January, February-ish 2021, his wife is 8 months pregnant with their third.
She's ready to pop any minute. And so Sandra, I think, notably, if we look at her history and see that sexual relations, you know.
I did not have sexual relations with that woman.
Well, I think Matthew would have loved to say that.
Correct.
However, there's evidence.
Matthew strikes me as the guy as he would inhale.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And he's going through all of this. He's a police officer. Don't get me wrong. It's a career. He was making money. He had a wife. He had two kids. He had another on the way. And Sandra wants child support. She wants help with the baby. She wants to send her or him to a daycare. She has this all like priced out, and it ends up being something totaling something like $4,000 a month. And like, I don't know about you, but that's a lot for anybody, much less someone with a typical family unit where you're working and you have multiple mouths to feed. And now you're adding like at least one more, if not two more.
Oh, he's definitely adding two more, and he's already got five total in his real house.
Right.
But, you know, there's that added, I think, like, obviously pressure, but it's like, it takes two to tango. You got her pregnant.
Yeah.
You were, you know, but more than that, more than the financial piece, I think this was the first time where he had to almost decide what he was going to do in terms of claiming her and claiming this child, because he's been able to deny. I mean, if she's very right. vocal with her friends and text messages and like who she's dating and who she's been with and these things, and maybe they believed her and maybe they didn't, maybe she could have fibbed, I don't know.
Yeah,
certainly none of that. She was 23 when she died. She was younger, you know, younger than this obviously when all of this started. But I think he was really at a crossroads where there's about to be living, quite literally living, breathing proof of the affair that he had.
Right. And an affair that he's had for a long time. That was also an abuse of his power, which is sort of like already we're at two strikes, right? And then you add sort of this animosity or this financial status and the potential of whatever havoc this wreaks in your home life and your work life. So now you might not even be able to afford your quote unquote public wife and kids, but now you might not be able to afford that and your private side relationship and potential child from that affair.
Well, right. And I think, you know, if we can put a pin there for a second, if we look at predators in general, right? Allegedly he is, because he's not been convicted of anything. He has been arrested for her murder, newsflash, if you didn't know that yet. But, you know, predators are drawn to children of broken homes for a lot of reasons. First of all, they're starved for attention. Attention, regardless that they're not receiving other ways, positive or negative, it doesn't matter, especially to a child. Attention is attention. That is what they're seeking.
Mm-hmm.
Even, you know, and I don't mean that in a selfish, self-seeking way. I don't think that they know enough of what that would mean yet, but it certainly grows that way over time. Another reason is, so of course, you know, they're starved for it. The second being, who's really going to notice, right? Because they're starved for that attention, it does mean that there's fewer eyes over them paying attention to what's going on.
And there are so many reasons why that might be. It doesn't even have to be negligent caregivers. It's just now there might only be one of you and you have to work and get the kids somewhere or whatever.
Yeah, or there's more than one kid, or, you know, it does take a village. But if that village is a village of one, can it be done? Sure. But
somebody
who wants to abuse kids is going to hone in on the fact that this is a child who is looking for something that's lacking, and innocently.
And there's opportunity to and, be.
Yeah, there's certainly an opportunity. There's some kind of unfiltered access to this child.
Yes.
And then on the flip side, you know, you also have later down the road, say you are behaving inappropriately, you also have the benefit of that person not being believed
right.
at some point. And so you have, they want this attention. There's nobody really going to notice or likely prevent you from giving that attention to that child. And then you have the bonus of, who are they going to believe? Me, this upstanding person, or this kid from this, you know, the other right. side of the tracks, right? And so if you take the pin out from before and we look at all of the things that he has to now consider, he no longer can deny
right.
this. He can't say, well, who are they going to believe? Me, this upstanding guy. Member of the community with, you know, 2.5 kids in the white picket fence, or this girl who is from a troubled background, who has struggled, who puts it all out on the internet.
Right.
You know, who are they going to, you know, a her versus me, I win that every time. But now you've got this tangible proof of this affair.
Right.
Which is going to likely destroy your marriage if she didn't already know about it. It's going to destroy your standing in your career.
Right.
Because you've had this access to children that will certainly be, hopefully, dear God, taken away from you. If your job isn't taken away from you, and honestly, I would say that you're not moral or ethically inclined. I would say that that role you have, you need to be a moral and ethical kind of guy.
So, ideally.
Well, I think so. So there are all these different ways his world could potentially implode by the birth of this child and by her being as vocal as she's been about everything else in her life.
Right.
Being vocal about him and their relationship.
Yeah. And I think then you mix all of that up and you throw it in a pressure cooker, which is two pregnancies. The first being his wife's, which she ended up having a child, I believe, literally the day or like between 24 and 48 hours after
it was
Sandra dies.
It was determined that Sandra was dead.
And then you also add in Sandra's pregnancy, which is its own pressure cooker of sorts. And so this all sort of boils over. And I think her final day, which I believe it was February 1st, 2021, he ends up going over to her apartment and they talk. He says that it was to break things off. It was to break up for good, block her, get rid of her, delete her number, all of that.
Mid snowstorm, by the way.
Yep. And like we're in the Northeast, so it's not a little snowstorm. I think it was like 10 inches or something.
Yeah. And not only that, but could it potentially have been something where, I mean, do I agree with breaking up over text? No, you're a fucking adult. But he's not.
Right.
He doesn't behave that way. He certainly doesn't behave in a way, that, again, that I would call ethically, regardless of whether or not he killed her.
Right.
He's still a predator and he should still be doing time for that. But, you know, could he have broken up with her over a text or over a phone call? Sure. Did he have to go there? Is he now chivalrous and
suddenly thoughtful and respectful of her?
Of maybe the way that she might handle that and her being pregnant and that? I don't think so.
And so we see him on security footage essentially go up to her room and then later comes down. I think he's up there for like a half hour or so, give or take a few minutes, and he leaves. He does not leave with a bag. He is not lugging out, you know what I mean, like a big trash bag or anything. She is found dead in her own apartment. Now, I think what's interesting is that she has died by strangulation from this hanging attempt. I don't know about you, but typically most people think of various ways to sort of end their life by suicide, and they don't normally think of ways to get creative with it, which is not at all a criticism. Dear God, like, you don't need to get creative. What if he just called 988? Like, that's fine. But
we'd actually encourage that, believe it or not.
Yeah, I would love that. But for her to sort of have access to a variety of means and to choose one that's a significantly more complex way to do this that is common in prisons is very interesting for her to have thought up on her own while being excited for a child, while seeing the man who is going to be the father of her child, who she wants to be with. She ends up, I think, actually getting pregnant because his wife gets pregnant with her third and she's like, I want a kid. Like, I want to be valid enough to have a kid by you too.
Which is flawed and speaks to immaturity, no doubt. And that's not a slam at Sandra. But this was a troubled girl who has been groomed, who is not thinking the way you and I do about a relationship. And it shouldn't be. This is not a healthy... I don't know. There's no like healthy coping skills or communication or boundaries or anything like that. So throw all of that to the side. And she's looking at, well, he's around and she has kids by him and he's choosing her. So how do I get him to choose me?
Right. And she does genuinely convince him to do this. Like, this was not an unplanned pregnancy. She told him it was like an ultimatum, like, okay, get me pregnant or get out, essentially, for lack of a better term.
And it's like, what did he think was going to happen? Like, not for nothing, guy. You're not shooting blanks. Like, you're quite fertile. You've got...
Yep, we got three confirmed.
Three ways to prove it.
Yep. And so, I think it's an interesting modgepodge of facts about this case. And then we look at the investigation, and it is pretty much immediately ruled a suicide, which is, hey... Like you said, most people, they go in, they know of a troubled past. They know things are going on. She isn't very mentally well. She doesn't have a lot of healthy coping skills or a solid support group. Sure. But there's also no note. She's also pregnant. And this is a complex way that most, I would say, like, quote unquote, layman, you know, mm-hmm. wouldn't think of.
Well, and I would say this. I would say that the investigators or, you know, I mean, likely a police officer and, you know, an officer, a patrolman would probably head out to do the initial well persons check, to check on right. her. But detectives should come in and do the actual investigation part. And so I can see that initially why you would think that she took her own life. I would think it. You likely would, too. But there should be more of a dig into who she was as a person and her last communications and who saw her in the last 24 to 48 hours. And really hone in what happened in that time to right. officially slap that seal of suicide like next to her name.
Confirmed.
Yeah, it just seems, I don't want to say careless, but I think it borders that. But I also, you know.
Sort of flippant, yeah.
What's the workload there? How new are these officers? How long have they been on the job? How many death scenes have they been to? You know, did they do a pill count? Did they do all the things that are typically pretty... standard
yeah
to do? And you know, I'd have those questions I'd want asked too. And I don't know if that was covered in the case podcast. He covered pretty much everything else. I'm certainly not complaining.
Yeah, Kirk went through a lot. And I think too, like, you know, there's no suicide letter. There are some things that are very blatantly missing, in my opinion. Again, not a police officer, couldn't be me. I don't have the guts for that job, nor frankly do I have the lung capacity. But I think there was some overlooking here. And one of the major things is that Sandra, being so vocal about a lot of her mental health, had no conversations about suicidality before this. And also, Matt Farwell comes over to break up with her. They're together for 30 minutes. She's determined to be dead within the hour by the autopsy report. And she texts and calls and posts and Facebooks or fucking whatever. Nothing else from the time he gets there.
She was active on her Snapchat and her Facebook and all of her social media platforms. And I don't know. I don't have Facebook, but she strikes me as the kind of gal who was posting her lunch.
Yeah, like, she likes to Facebook her problems, not to face them. Many people do.
Which wasn't uncommon. And it definitely wasn't 4 years ago when this happened. And so, you know, she was... almost predictable in that way, which is great in terms of looking at this case backwards.
Right.
Right. Where you can see, okay, so she did all of this and she had friends and she was talking about how excited she was to have this baby. And then he comes over and it is crickets forever.
Yeah.
For the rest of forever. And could it be? Could it be that the conversation went so terribly and he tells in a different light and she was so distraught that she made a rash and impulsive decision the moment he left? Maybe.
Sure.
But possible. I also know statistically women take their lives in less violent measures, meaning we're more likely to overdose on pills,
yep,
we're more likely to try to die in our cars through carbon monoxide. We're more likely to try to go in another way where there is less cleanup and yep. less visual cues of it, I guess. We're very odd in that way, where a man is more likely to take a rash way in terms of like maybe shooting themselves, cutting right. themselves, something like that. And it's actually why women are successful less.
Yeah.
And I don't mean, it's so awful to say successful and, you know, killing themselves, but fewer yeah. women die by suicide because we tend to choose ways to do it that are reversible.
Right. Or have longer time for someone to interrupt, you know?
Exactly. So, you know, there's a lot of history and research to say that, you know, people jumping off bridges, the halfway point between hitting the water and when they left the bridge, they've changed their mind.
Yep.
And it's a horrible thing because many of them don't make it. But we know that from the ones who have survived their injuries, and there are
plenty,
lots of them, who say that they regretted it. And so when we talk about men versus women, women tend to choose a way that we can undo it if we want to. If we take too many pills, maybe we can make a call and get our stomach pumped. We might be able to do something in that way where, you know, there's not that immediacy, but there is here. What's more likely to happen versus not does not mean she could not have done this, but it does mean that I'm going to look twice at that.
Yes. And, you know, regardless, I think, of whether or not the person participating in the lethal activities, you know, whatever that act of suicide might be, regardless of if you want to reverse it, if somebody else sees it or hears it and calls 911, they have an obligation to act and they can intervene in a lot of those. I think it's interesting that hanging was the means of choice here. I think it's very niche and interesting the specific way that that was gone about. And I think that not for nothing, for someone who was super excited for a life that she was about to bring into this world, for someone who has essentially been emotionally stunted in her teens from the time she starts getting groomed, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And then, I don't know about you, but thank God I am not the same partner today that I was at 13 when I started dating people. Thank the dear Lord. Everybody in this world is better off for that. Like, I grew like you're supposed to, but if you are still glued to the same person that you were with at that age, and then you add on the sort of power and abuse of that being a grooming and sort of a salty situation.
Oh, yeah. I mean, she's been through trauma, even if she just doesn't have the capital T word to call it that.
Right.
This is normalized, though, because by this time, when we're talking about her, her grandmother has passed away.
Yeah.
Her mother has passed away. So what other of those core relatives and people that she looked up to and those role models that she had, regardless of whether they were positive or not, but who else other than this man and the other men who abused her did she have from her childhood that were her sounding boards at that time, who right. she was growing and learning from?
That could wave the red flag and say, hey,
who might have recognized the signs that she was in an abusive relationship, because people don't often behave the same as they did at the start from when they do in the middle. And had she not had people close enough to recognize that, who's going to know?
Right. So it becomes very interesting, gets ruled a suicide. It stays that way for a long time. And then the case season comes out and this starts to shed some more light on it. You fast forward a little bit more. Suddenly, the Karen Reed case is going on.
Which took place in Canton, Mass, which is
like bordering, if not near close to bordering Stoughton.
Exactly. And I believe Sandra lived in Canton.
Yes.
At the time that she died. So we have all of this overlap. And then you have Karen Reed, right? Who was just on trial for the murder of her boyfriend.
Yeah.
And that case ended in a mistrial and she will be tried again. So when was that? The spring of this year, I think Karen Reed was tried.
Yes.
And, you know, there's a lot of people, including Turtle Boy, who, if you're familiar with the Karen Reed case, you're familiar with him. He's very vocal online. And he is a staunch believer that she is innocent. There are just as many people, I think, that believe she did it as believe that she didn't. And both sides are awfully passionate about their beliefs and why. And I find that very interesting. But the reason why Karen Reed is important here is because we're talking about a lot of the same people.
Yeah.
There was a lot going on in these police departments. Now, Karen's boyfriend who died was also a police officer. He was a Boston police officer.
Yeah, John O'Keefe.
And, you know, entirely speculating, do not know if this is true, but what if these are all related? What if he knew something and he was willing to speak on it? I mean, there were a lot of people that didn't want shit being said about shit.
Right. And I think, you know, whether or not these two cases are related, what is the same in both of them is a lot of the investigators, people who came in to say, hey, is what happened here really what we think happened here? And I think regardless of if there's sort of like a mental note that we want to keep this under wraps, we want to keep this closed door, closed lips, whatever. At best case, I think there's a pattern here of negligence, you know? We're not looking into a lot of this.
I think that the least bit of concern here is if everyone involved is innocent, it is negligence and almost a flippant, impulsive instinct to just fucking solve it, stamp it, staple it, fucking send it off, seal it away.
Right, it's
and
done.
We're on to the next. Whether that is due to an abundance of cases or something more sinister, I don't know. But right. That is... You know, that's best case scenario, in my opinion. The worst case scenario is what we've just spent however long we've been doing this for right now, talking about, where it is intertwined and murky and shit needs to be sifted through. And it seemed like nobody was willing to do that until this third party true crime podcaster comes in and starts asking questions that people didn't want to answer.
Nope. And it was crickets. Like I said, he deemed it a noble failure up until months afterwards when there are these updates coming out.
And the irony of that is that, you know, I believe he single-handedly solved this and stirred up enough conversation, and maybe people felt confident for the first time since 2020 to actually say something
right
about what was going on, that it was, you know, hands were forced to do something. And, you know, I think that he deserves the credit for that. And I think that there's a lot of people now that are like, well, I cracked the case and she cracked the case. No, they didn't. This was started from the bottom. He did the groundwork that the police should have done in 2020. And he did it later on his own.
I will say the one sort of trigger warning red flag I'd give you about going to listen to this season, and I think you should, if you've gotten this far in this episode, you absolutely should, is there is an episode called The Explorers, and he literally, it's like an hour, he just lays out incident after incident after incident, like almost in immediate succession of child rapes and assaults. That one was definitely difficult to stomach, so you should proceed with caution for that one episode. But it is so important, I think, to listen to that deeper dive, because Allie and I are seriously just roundtabling. We're talking, processing, trying to make sense of all of this. He really lays out all of these things in a very digestible, understandable way.
Yeah, and these are current events. This is what's going on right now. And if you're local to New England like we are, then, you know, we're watching our phones, we're watching the news, we're hoping that somebody says more on this. And it, you know, he's been arrested. Matthew Farwell has been arrested. I'm sure more arrests will follow. But we wanted to just sort of point you in the direction that certainly Kirk Minahan does not need a plug from our tiny corner of the true crime world. But for our listeners who I know take these cases seriously, who, you know, want to see some good come out of what people spend all of this time talking about, and I know that a lot of true crime podcasts almost over glorify and do, I think, what is sometimes more harm than good with no real experience in the field, and how that can negatively impact. I think that this was very tastefully, accurately presented with, you know, Sandra
right
in mind, which you know, as a girl who didn't have any other family alive who lost her own life, who else was going to speak up for Sandra?
Who has truly been a victim her whole life, essentially, you know?
Oh, yeah.
And so I think when your abuser has that power, when they have the ability to decide whether or not you get justice, you get the same things that everybody should rightfully be afforded, it deserves a little bit of a spotlight. And you know how, if we're all wrong and Matthew Farwell gets deemed innocent, awesome, we'll update you. I'm not holding my breath, but we'll let you know.
But I do still think he needs to serve time for crimes against children, whether or not he killed her is, to me, entirely separate. I think, you know, his crimes against her and her youth could certainly go toward the motive as to why he has this vested interest in her not being around anymore after she's pretty hell-bent on not keeping her mouth shut.
But it is a separate
charge. But, you know, that should still be, I think, dealt with separately if there's not enough in terms of her death. But I think what, you know, Abby and I spoke very briefly. We listened to the Case podcast season 2 separately, and very, very briefly, maybe less than 5 minutes, talked about it before we hopped on here. So a lot of our conversation has been what you've just heard. But what I, not to speak for Abby, but I know that we do agree on is that a lot of these programs or institutions are rooted, I believe, you know, in our unicorn shitting rainbows world that we wish existed, but very sadly does not. But I do think that these things are rooted in a desire to do good.
Right.
And maybe make money too. I mean, obviously always make, it's always follow the money, right? But a desire to do good and provide a service and to bridge a gap where communication maybe hasn't always been solid or what it should be. And I think that we can see that a lot in a lot of organized religions. We see that in the Boys and Girls Scouts. We can see it where ideally this access to youth sounds like a great idea and a great way to get them in touch with things that they that they should be and that they want to be.
And make no doubt, they should be available. We should have these things for kids. But, you know, anywhere that someone has unchecked access to kids, there needs to be a thorough enough investigation as to why. And it's not like there are plenty of people that want to do it out of the goodness of their heart. They're great people. They just care. And that's exactly the kind of people that we want around them. But there are other people who want power and authority over kids that can say, I'm the adult and we were alone. They don't know what they're talking about.
And that's just it. And I think that you take law enforcement out of this, but you look at any job where there is a position of authority and there could potentially be some unchecked and unfiltered access to children, right? The medical field, the education field, law enforcement are just to name a few of those where there is a very clear position of authority. And especially to a kid, that authority seems very great. And, you know, there's this onus on us as society and the community members to say, who are we going to allow to have this unfiltered relationship with these kids?
Yeah.
First of all, I don't really think that anyone's relationship with children should be entirely unfiltered and the parent should always be involved. But, you know, that's my two cents. But I also think that, you know, like in everything we talk about, things can be great in concept and very detrimental in practice, but they can also be far exceeding your greatest expectations, and they can be amazing. And I think that this law enforcement explorers program and other places has been extremely helpful, and there have been people that have gone on to become police officers because of what they learned and the experience they gained and the connections they made throughout that program. So I'm not saying that these are, you know,
fruitless.
But I also think that in every way where that can attract these really great people who innocently, ethically, and well-intentionedly want to do these things for the right reasons, it's also going to attract those who don't. And you know, predators look and sound just like us, so what do you do with that?
Dare I say they're better at it than we are, because it's how they gain access. You have to trust them and your kids have to like them enough to go to them.
I mean, as a little plug for our current series that this is kind of popping out in the middle of, Albert Fish is a fantastic example of don't fucking leave your kids with strangers.
No, it doesn't matter how nice they look. It doesn't matter how well they dress. It doesn't matter if they're a cute old man. You just, there is an onus on a caregiver to give care to their child. That is part of the name. It's part of the game. It's part of all of it. If you're going to leave your kids alone with someone else, you need to know who you're leaving them alone with. And that's pretty much it. Like you need to know and you need to be able to trust who you're leaving them alone with. So
put your damn phone down, get it off of Facebook, and pay attention to your kid.
And who's paying attention to them?
Yes.
Which is really the big one.
Because if you're not paying attention to your kid, I guarantee goddamn tea ya, somebody else is.
I mean, I worked with people professionally who have been convicted of many child sex assaults. And you know what? If you didn't know it, you wouldn't know it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the thing that I've always had tucked in the back of my mind. It is not the person that, you know, is a little too interested in comic books and childlike things. It's the people that...
And it could be.
I mean, they could be, but typically it's the people that know how to work the adults to the place where they say, I don't know you that well, but you seem nice enough. And can connect enough with the kids that they're like, yeah, I want to go do that, Mom. Please, come on, let's go.
Or you're in a position of authority, and why shouldn't I trust you?
Right.
So, you know, this was a very, very brief little introduction. We didn't get into, like, any of the text messages, which are a read in and of themselves. And just the way that this man victimized this child while he was at work in his police cruiser, while he was on the clock leaving work to go see her. I mean, the track record is miles long.
Extensive.
So we really just wanted to kind of say this is what's going on in real time. As more information comes out, maybe we'll do another roundtable episode, but this is something that I would like to do that isn't so... You know, of course, we like to be prepared and talk about things that we know something about. We wouldn't just come on here and not do that. But with very little independent research on our part, would encourage you to look into that other podcast we told you about if you are interested in learning more. But keeping an eye on the Sandra Birchmore case. And my jaw was on the floor when I was reading up on it. And it was like, holy shit, it's really happening.
Yes.
Somebody fought for Sandra. Somebody.
And she deserves that.
You know, we could see some kind of resolution that she is deserving of. And her unborn child was too.
Yeah.
So.
Keep your eyes, keep your ears open. We sure will. Let us know if you're interested in this. On Spotify, I'm going to try to remember to make a little poll. But if not, there's always that, like, what did you think about this episode spot? You can let us know if you're into it. If you're not, we won't take offense. We just like to know. But it is worth keeping your eyes and ears out for. If you wanted to keep up with us outside of that, you could do so on Instagram. That would be at About Time for True Crime Pod with periods in between every word. So that's ABOUT period TIME period FOR period TRUE period CRIME period POD because podcast was too long. But you could also email us. Allie, where could they email us?
If you wanted to send us an email, you could send that to abouttime4tc@gmail.com. So that's ABOUTTIME4tc@gmail.com. Thank you for excusing my voice in this episode and likely in part 3 of Albert Fish. We love you and love to hang out with you. And if I take a look at my watch, that was
About Time for True Crime.
Bye.
Bye.